Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf, Lamates and Avodah Zarah. We begin the second line off the top with items that may not be consumed if purchased from a goy. So we have these fish items. One is Vitaris Terufa. Number two is Vitzir, Shein Badaga, V'chulu, which will be explained later. One item mentioned in the Mishnah, which is covered by the V'chulu, is something called V'achilek. That's the next item, V'achilek. What is V'achilek? Mai, what is this fish called Chilek? Omar of Nachman, Barabo, Omara, Zu Sultanis. This little mini fish actually goes by a different name as well. It's called Sultanis. Rashi in the Mishnah explained that actually it's a kosher fish, so that would not be an issue. But the problem is it doesn't yet have its fins and scales developed properly. It's going to happen later, and that would be enough to consider it a kosher fish, even though it hadn't yet grown its kosher signs. So then what's the problem? So why did they ban this fish? Why can't you just buy this from a guy? Because you can't tell it apart. Very hard to differentiate between the sultanas, which are kosher, of the kosher variety, and the other little mini fish that swim along and caught along with it. So you have this mix of little mini fish, which are very difficult to identify. Some of which are really kosher, that's the sultanas, because they will develop the kosher signs, you know, further on in their life cycle, versus the other fish which are deemed non-kosher. So this guy who's selling you the mix is perhaps allowing the other ones to go through as well, in which case he's selling you kosher and non-kosher together. You can't buy it. So you have to buy it from a yid who actually can, you know, ascertain that he's only selling you of the kosher variety. Tanu Rabbanu, ein lo achsha. This is a brisa pertaining to kosher signs on fish. Suppose the fish doesn't yet feature those signs. Ve'osid legada lachar zman, but it's going to develop upon him later on in his, right? So it's going to grow on later. Kigoyin, oh, hasultanis, that's our fish. Or something called uffets. So the sultanis for uffets, these types of fish, which will develop their kosher signs later, hareza mutter, it's okay for consumption even now. Because it's that type of fish which has kosher signs. On the other hand, yesh lo achshav, fish has the signs currently, but as soon as you pull it out of the water, somehow it sheds. Does that work? Va'asad lahasher, it's going to shed its signs, its scales. Bishah sho'ilu min hayam, when it's taken out of the water. Keep going. For instance, we have a long list of types of fish that behave in this manner. Kigoyin akoinos va'apoinos, kithas patios, va'achs patios, va'oitnos. All these have their kosher signs in the water, but shed it on the way out. Mutter, they're okay. Because this is actually the Safra and Parsha Shmini. The Pasuk says, Kol asher ein loy, snapper v'kaskes es b'mayim. That's the punchline. In the water. As long as it has it in the water, it's okay. And regarding the first scenario where it doesn't have it now, but will develop later on, that too is okay. And that's based on, Tesis brings it, that's based on the Lashon HaPasuk, which says, V'chol asher ein loy, it doesn't have, it doesn't even grow the snapper v'kaskeses. So ein loy, either it doesn't have it now, or will not have it in the future, and will not have it in the future. So only then is it a problem. Otherwise, if it has it either now or will develop in the future, you're safe. Mutra. Achriz Rabbi Avo Bekisri. So one day Rabbi Avo made an announcement in the town of Kisri. Kirei dogim. These are the innards, the fish innards, the intestines. V'u boron, or the eggs, the, you know, the roe, nikachin mekaladim, you can buy it from anybody in this town, assuming that it's from a kosher origin. Why? Cheskosan, it's known that in this town, einan boim, they're brought from these places, ella, it comes only from Mipalusa, Vaspamia, from these locations. Rashi says, so it happens that they knew at that time that ain dogim tmeim, mitzuyin sham, there are no non-kosher fish in those areas. So we know everything local comes from there. Kiha, in similar fashion to what Abaye told us, the Rabaye, that we can rely on presumptions and chazakas regarding kosher fish. So this tzachanta fish, this is again the chilek fish discussed earlier, from a certain location, from a certain river. The Bave, that was the name of the Nahara of the river. So this type of fish from that river, Shari, is okay. You know that it's kosher. My time of why? Is it because the waters of that river are really stormy and gushing? Vahai dog tummy, and a non-kosher fish would not be able to survive in that water. Kibin delesli chut ha-shedet, since he doesn't feature a spinal cord. Interesting, a dog tummy doesn't have that. So beduchta duradifim maya, when the waters are really choppy, loy matziko, he couldn't survive. So you know it's a kosher fish which has a chut ha-shedru. Asks the Gemara, but we see that non-kosher fish survive pretty well in all types of settings. Vokachazin, and we see the koi that they last even in stormy situations. Ela mishum de malichamai, rather because the water there is salty. Vahai dog tummy, and this non-kosher fish, since it doesn't have the protective scales, kidin de lesle kalfi, beduchta de malichamai, in a place where there's water, salty water, le matzi koi, it can't really survive. And that's how we know fish from that body of water is kosher. Says the Gemara v'chazin on the koi, but we see otherwise. We see that plenty of fish that are non-kosher can survive very well in salty water, in super salty water. Ela, rather, the reasons mishum d'lei marbe tina, because the earth, the mud beneath that river doesn't develop, which doesn't grow dog tummy, doesn't support non-kosher fish. It's a fact. So they knew that in this river all you have is kosher fish. Hence, something brought from that river is deemed kosher. Amar Avinah, but that's only in the good old days. But today, when they diverted other waterways into this river, so now it's a mix from various sources of water. Ha'idan today, the koshafch, where there are spillings of bay into that river of Nahar Goyza, of Nahar Gam, the water from Nahar Goyza, Nahar Gam to come, and were diverted into that bay of Nahara. So now you don't know what's what. Asiri, any fish from that body of water must be checked and identified before consumption. No assumptions anymore. Amar Abaye. Interestingly, Haichamra de Yamashari, the water donkey is okay. So there's a fish shaped like sort of a donkey. It's okay. It's kosher. Taira de Yama Asir. But a fish shaped like a bull. So a Taira de Yama is Asir. Rashi brings, based on the Mishnah in Maseches Kelim, that anything you find on dry land, you find a corresponding animal at sea. So you have a dry land donkey, you have a water donkey, you have a dry land shire, you find the same in the water. V'simanech, here's a sign to remember what's what. Tame. So a chamor, which is considered non-kosher on land, tor. The similar type of species at sea, the water donkey is okay. On the other hand, tar, an ox on dry land, which is kosher, tummy. The corresponding variety at sea is tummy. Amar Rav Ashi, shefar nuna, a certain type of fish, shari, it's kosher. Kodesh nuna, a different type of fish, is asr, is considered non-kosher, v'simanech. Here's a sign to remember. Kodesh l'Hashem, right? Kodesh is for Hashem, off limits, for us. As per the fish called Kadesh Nuna. Ikadamri, there's another version of this list. Kvar Nuna, a fish called Kvar Nuna is Asr, is off limits, is Simonech. A siman to remember is Kivrei Avidikacham, the graves of Goyim, which are Metame. So the fish called Kavar, like a grave, is Tame. Rabbi Akiva, Ikalil Ginzak, he paid a visit to the town of Ginzak. Aisul Kame, they presented to him Haununa, a certain type of fish, which they were not sure. about Dava Domi, it appeared, it closely resembled L'chipusha, a fish called Chipusha, which is a non-kosher fish. So he wasn't sure, he wanted to verify whether it had scales. Chafi b'tikula, so he covered it with a basket so that it would jump around the basket, and then he checked the basket for scales and he found scales. Chazabe kafi, he discovered scales on the wall of the basket, v'sharye, and he permitted the fish due to scale content. Rav Ashi Ikla, he came to the town, lit Tamaduria, and again they presented him with a problematic, questionable fish. I still come out when you know this fish. Avadami lit slufcha, it looked like a slufcha, a fish, and which is a non-kosher fish. It was very similar. So he picked up the fish, nakta, he held the ladiyoma opposite the sun to inspect it for scales. Chaza da have a bit simchi. He noticed these really, really thin scales, v'shari, that was deemed sufficient to permit the fish. Third story, Rav Ashi, Ikla, he came to the town, Lahu Asra of this place. Aishel kaminuna, they showed him a fish, da avidami la shafarnuna, which appeared very close to this shafarnuna fish, which was actually a kosher fish. But he needed to inspect the fish and see if it had scales. Chafye b'mish. Now this was a dark skin. It was a black fish. So what did he do? So he used a white utensil and rubbed it. Chafye. He rubbed it with mishchli chivru in the white containers. Then he checked the containers for scales. Chaza. He noticed they killed for these black scales, and he knew that it was a kosher fish v'shari. Rabba Barachana. What happened to him? Ikla la akro de agma. He came to this town. Akro de agma. They offered him a fish. They served him a kosher fish. Okay, Shami. And suddenly he hears a fellow nearby referring to that fish with a non-kosher name, which was surprising to him because it was really a kosher fish. Shami lo gavri notices this man. He hears a guy calling it davakarle bati. He's calling this a kosher fish with the name bati, which is the name of a non-kosher fish. Uh-oh, something's fishy. He figured mina shamayim, raised some flags. Amar, he figured mina kakarle bati. The very fact that the fellow called it a bati, shmamina, leads me to suspect that perhaps it's a message from heaven. Keep away from this fish. There's something non-kosher there. Davar tummy is there's something of a non-kosher element in that dish. And therefore he held back. He pulled back. Le'echol mene, he didn't eat it. Le'tzafra, the next morning, ayin, but he took a close look. And in fact, he found something inappropriate. Ashkech by davar tummy, he found a non-kosher ingredient in the dish. And he was very happy that he abstained the previous night. He was protected min hashamayim, korei nafshein, applied to himself the pasuk, lo yu'una lo tzadik, kol oven a tzadik, one who was extra careful, such as he was in this case, will Hashem will not allow him to falter. So because of his extra strictness and his being extra careful, Hashem accorded him special protection and spared him from eating something non-kosher. Interestingly, I just read the story of the Chazon Ish, who was served rice for lunch or whatever, and he pulled back. He says, I had a dream last night about something with nails. Maybe he was eating nails, or he noticed nails, I don't remember exactly, but something with nails, and he took it as a sign that something, with food. The next day, he noticed the rice. He says, I'm not going to eat it. And then they looked at it, and they found, they looked closer, and they found some worms in the rice. So he was spared non-kosher food. Okay, Vakoyer Shel Chiltus. Another item which is off limits for us is this Chiltus vegetable or something that's sliced by the guy. So he gives you this skirt, this sliced Chiltus. Keep away. What's wrong? My time, it's just a vegetable. Mishum de mafsikli b'sakin because he sliced it with his knife. So since it's sliced with a goyish knife, with a non-kosher knife. Now, even though we know for a fact that the residue embedded in the knife is spoiled stuff. It's not going to enhance the flavor of the food. The Amar we learned, something which adds a putrid, spoiled flavor is not going to affect the status of the food. Answers the Gemara, but here it's different because we're speaking about a very sharp flavored food. Agav the churfe, because of its sharpness, the chiltis of this chiltis vegetable, mechalili l'shamnanisa, it sweetens, has a sweetening effect. It refreshes the fat, the grease found on that knife, in the knife. And now, v'havili, it's considered k'nusin tam l'shvach, like it's imparting a positive flavor, v'asun, and therefore it's asun. There was a story with Avdei, the slave, an Eved Kanani of a tzaddik named Rav Levi. Avdei Rav Levi. Havakamaz ben chiltisa. So he was in the chiltis business, and he was selling chiltis I guess for Rav Levi. And then one day Rav Levi passed away. Kinach nafshi, Rav Levi passed away. So the question was, can we continue buying the same product by the Eved? Shall we assume he's keeping to the same, you know, recipe? Or shall we assume, shall we be concerned about kashrus? Also, committed Rabbi Yechon. So they posed the question to Rabbi Yechon. Amar Leizei said, Tim Rebbe Shaila, Ma'u l'mizban minek, we continue buying the same product from the same, you know, factory. Although the boss, Rabbi Levi, is no longer with us. Amar Leizei said, look, Avdei shel chaver, an eved of an upstanding, righteous, reliable, a man of integrity like Rabbi Levi, he retains his status unless you discover otherwise. Hariyuk Chaver is the same status as the Chaver. You can be sure that he's selling you kosher material. In similar fashion, of Huna Bar Menyumi, what happened to him? Zavan, he purchased Tchilta, you know, the Tchilas threads of the strings of the tzitzis, which are very expensive and exotic because, you know, you have to find the right sourcing, the right ingredients, and actually some, as the Gemara Menachas tell us, some were attempted to actually forge this type of material. They would use some paint or whatever. So you have to know that it's you know, it's the real stuff. So he purchased chilta, the tchelis strings, me'anshe, from the people, the base of the household, the Rav Amram Chasida. So rather than buying it from him directly, he purchased it from the anshe base, means his wife. He bought it from his wife. Also, he came to Rav Yosef. So he came to Rav Yosef with a question: could I use it? Well, he didn't have an answer. He's walking along, and Pagabe, he bumps into Chanan Chaita. That was his name, Chanan the tailor. Amalei, and I guess he related to him that he had inquired with Rav Yosef. So Chanan Chaita says, "Ah, Amalei Yosef, Ani Yosef, the poor Yosef." Meant to say that, how would you expect Rav Yosef to know the answer to this question? Manali, how would he know the answer? I'll tell you a personal story, first-hand story. But the idea of uvda, it happened with me. The zvini tchelta, I purchased this type of tchelas anshe devesi de Ravna, from the family, the wife of Ravna, who was the brother achv de Rechibar Abba. And I had the same question. Vasoil kemei de Rav Masna, I posed it to Rav Masna, could I use it? Well, I have a biyad, he didn't have an answer. So the next was Rav Yehuda. Asoil kemei, I came before the Rav Yehuda Magrunya. Amarli says, oh, you came to the right person. You came to me, I have an answer for you. Hachem Shmuel, I have a quote from Shmuel who says it's okay. Eishes Chaver, Harihik Chaver, the wife of a Chaver, a person with integrity. She carries on his tradition, his legacy. And even after his passing, it's assumed that she's conducting herself with Erlichkeit, with integrity. The Tanur Rabban, as we have in the Braisa, Eishes Chaver, the wife of a Chaver, a person who is reliable with respect to Tumah v'Tahara, with respect to Tumas and Maestris. He's an upstanding fellow. So his wife has his status as well. Harihi k'Chaver, Avdi shel Chaver, likewise a slave of a Chaver. Harihu has the same status k'Chaver. Chaver Shemes, so this is during his lifetime, and even after he passes away. Chaver Shemes, if a Chaver passes away, Ishto Yabonim, his wife, and children, Uvnei Basin, the rest of his family, Harim Chaskasam, so his wife, his sons, his daughters, they're all, they keep that status, that to be relied upon. Ad Sheyachto, unless you find out otherwise, you start suspecting, they lead you to think otherwise. Okay, so otherwise, until then, we assume they maintain their status. V'chein chatzar, likewise, a chatzar, a place where they sell shamoichrim b'tcheles, they sell the tcheles for the tzitzis, that's where they produce it, it's a factory, and they're known to be reliable. Harem chaskasan, we can assume that they maintain their status, asher tipasan, unless you find out, otherwise, you discover some problems. Until then, they have a chazaka, they're presumed to be selling the true Techeles. Tanur Rabbanan. So we have an Eishes Amoritz. Okay, we have a wife of an unlearned fellow who is not to be relied upon with respect to all types of halachis. But now she married a Talmud Chacham. She nisus l'chaver. V'chein bito shel Amoritz. Likewise, the daughter of an Amoritz. She nisus, who now married l'chaver. V'chein avdei shel Amoritz, or a slave that belonged to an Amoritz. who was sold, shenimka lachaver, was now owned by a chaver. Rashi says a chaver is a fellow who is a man of integrity. You can trust him for all types of things, for trumas and maestros issues, for tahara issues. So all these sort of add-ons, the wife, the daughter, the eved who now integrated into the chaver's family, we don't just assume that they're suddenly on the high ground. Kulan tzrichen the kavod of chavers, in order to rely on them and trust them, they have to actually accept upon themselves, they have to make that personal commitment that they will conform to this new lifestyle. Aval eshes chaver. But the other way around, let's say she had been married to a chaver and attained his status of integrity, right? And now goes and marries an amoritz, shnis lamoritz. The same with the daughter or the eved, right? V'chein bitoy shel chaver, who now married, shnis lamoritz. V'chein avdo shel chaver, that now was sold, shnim lamoritz. Einon, tzrichen. So now the question is, are they presumed to have maintained and held on to their integrity and emunas? Did it become personal? Did they integrate it into their personal life? So now even though they changed their settings, we assume that they held on to their status, or shall we say that their status was simply dependent upon them being a wife or a daughter of a chaver, which is no longer the case, right? So that's the shah, that's machlekes. So according to Rabbi Meir, you can still trust them. Einan, tzrichen, lekabel de v'chaver, they don't have to go ahead and take upon themselves anew this commitment, because Rav Meir holds. Once they walk the walk, we assume they're on it, unless you know otherwise. Rabbi Da'imah, no, it wasn't their personal lifestyle. It was just because they were in the company of the chaver. So they sort of adapted to that person's, but it's not personal. As soon as they found in a new setting, new family, you never know. Rabbi Da'imah, afein tzrichem the kabel, divri chaver zachatchila, in order to be trusted, they have to go and make that personal declaration and commitment to chavras. Likewise, Rabbi Shimon Elazar would illustrate this with a story that circumstances can really impact a person's attitude. Masa, there was a story b'isha achas, a certain woman. She nisus l'chaver. First, she was married to Talmud Chacham. Boisak hasheres l'tefillin al yad, and she would help him, you know, tie in his tefillin. She was right there helping him do his, you know, righteous deeds. And then nisus l'meiches. She went and married a meiches, dishonest tax collector, and she got involved in his business. So she was always there at his right, whether he's a Talmud Chacham, whether he's a Meiches. Voisek Hasheres Kishrei Meiches Al Yadah, she would help him tie these receipts on his hand, whatever he needed for his profession, which wasn't the most upstanding profession. So you see that it's versatile. It's relative to the circumstance. Amar Rav. So what about sending certain items with a guy, okay, delivering certain items with a guy, putting it in his care, in his possession? Can he do that? Amar Rav, no, we have to seal it to avoid any issue of tampering. Okay? Amar Rav Chavis, it stands for four items, which we're going to see in a minute. Asur b'chaysim echad, you can't send that with a guy. You can't trust him, even with a seal. You need a double seal to make it more difficult and more challenging, which will deter any tampering. And again, the concern is that he may have swapped it. He may have taken your kosher food item and swapped it with his less valuable non-kosher item. So a double seal is required. But we have another list, another category, which is champag. Again, referring to four different items. These aren't such high-value items, and there's less of a concern. As long as there's some deterrent, even one seal is enough to trust him. Mutar b'chaisim echad, un chaisim is enough. So the first list is chavis, which stands for chalav, milk, basar, kosher meat, yain, kosher wine, right? You may have taken your kosher wine and filled the bottle with cheap non-kosher wine. Otcheles, that's the kosher tzitzit strings, which are very valuable. You may have swapped it with some fake blue strings. So all these, before you send it with a guy, make sure it's double sealed. Asur mechaisim echad would be forbidden if it's only with one seal. The second list is chavis. Sorry, is champag. So that stands for chiltis. That's that vegetable. Well, it's not such an expensive item. He's less tempted to go tamper with it than swap it. Morias, the fish sauce. Pas, bread, gvina, or cheese. All these are mutarim, chesim echad. As long as it has one seal, you're safe. Now, Rashi actually takes the next four lines, cuts and pastes it to the bottom of our segment later on. So let's go along with that. Let's skip to the word Virav. It's the first word on the sixth line off the top of the page. Virav. So Rav provided this double list, right? Chavis requires a double seal. And the ches is chalav, right? So you can't trust them with a single seal. Chalav is very tempted to swap the milk. Okay. And the second category is champag. The fourth is the gimel, which is gvina, cheese. You can trust them with one seal. Now, how could there be a difference between milk and cheese? You can't trust them with milk, but you could trust them with cheese. And they're both the same material. Rav. So according to Rav, why that distinction? Maishno gvina, why is it that by cheese? You don't assume he's going to put in that much effort to forge your... as long as it's one seal, it's enough. Chalav nami, same thing with milk. Loitarech ha-mazayif, why would he go to that extent and bother to forge a double seal, a single seal? So why do we need a double seal? Rav Kahane, you're right. Let's delete the milk. The ches did not stand for milk. Apik chalav, so take out the milk, because one seal will be enough. And the ches stands for va'ayil, and instead you insert chaticha. Ches is a chatichas dag, she'en bo simen, a slice of a fish, which has no identifying sign, so you can't tell if it's kosher. It's not something, chashev, Rashi says, demein yukarim, a mazayif, it's a high value item, so he might be tempted to swap the cuts of slices of fish, kosher for non-kosher. Well, says the Gemara, on that first list you have the base. Base stands for basar, meat. So it covers fish as well. Why do you have to repeat? Right? Fish and basar. Hainu basar, that's exactly like the meat. They're both very similar, right? It's right, Gavni basar, you're right, but he listed two types of meat. Meat and fish. To indicate that the halacha, this extra care has to be taken by both. Okay, that's Rav's listing, right? We have the chavis versus the champak. So chavis is the chatichas dog, basar, yain, and tcheles, very high value exotic stuff. Whereas the champak, which is a lower, less tempting, that's the chalav. That's the chiltis, murias, pas, and gvina. So that's Rav's list. Shmuel Aymer, Shmuel shrunk the list a bit. Not that he disagrees with Rav, but he felt it was unnecessary, first of all, to have fish and meat listed as separate items on that first category. So he took off the ches. He said bias is asr. Instead of chav is asr, bias is asr. That's the basr, which covers the fish as well. Yain and tcheles. It's asr with merely one signet. You need a double seal. And machag, and the second category, which is champag, he took out the pay, which is the pas. He wasn't concerned about swapping bread. So we're left with just mem, ches, gimel. That's machag. Mutar b'chosim echad, as long as it's sealed once, it's okay. So he goes through it, again, listing it. Basar, yayin, tcheles, that's the bias. Those are high-value, tempting items. Asurin b'chosim echad, one seal is not enough. The second list is the machag, that stands for murios, the fish sauce. I'm not concerned about insertion of wine if it's sealed once. Chiltis and gvina, these are mutar and mechaisim echad. And the reason why he shrunk the list is just, for technical reasons. The shmol, going to shmol, chatichas dag, shein basim, hainu basa, the slice of fish, which was Rav's ches, is really the same as the basa, which is the bay. There's no need to duplicate it, to mention it as two items on the list. Tzrei gavni basa, lamri, we don't have to discuss two types of meat. Now let's go back to that segment that we skipped on the second line from the top, pas. And likewise, he deleted bread. So in a sense, on this item, he took issue with Rav. He disagreed with Rav. Because Rav required that it should have at least one, right? One chosam. And And according to Shmuel, it's not necessary, because you wouldn't be tempted to swap your bread. Why? Pash, when it comes to bread, why can't you send it with the guy? What's the concern? Is he going to switch it? Take your fresh bread, your warm fresh bread, and swap it with some old bread. Krira, the cooler bread, meaning the less fresh bread. B'chamima, with respect to contrast to the warm fresh one, made the idea. Everybody can tell, so he wouldn't dare risk it. What about different types? The chiti with the sa'ari. I'll take your wheat bread, which is more valuable than the barley bread. I'll switch it over. Now I made the idea. Again, it's discernible and detectable. I ki adadi. Are we concerned that I'll swap the same type? Why would he do that? Kivin di kechaisim echad. If there's one seal, then if he has any reason to do so, he's not going to burn himself. He's not going to take the risk, because it's not much. There's not much gain involved. And therefore, according to Shmuel, there's no need to even seal it. Tanu rabbanon. Continues the Gemara. Ein lo ichni amach. Machag, again we have these Rashi Tevas. You can't purchase these items if you happen to find yourself in the town of in the country of Syria, with Syria, because there, although the Yidden were careful in terms of what they themselves consume, but for some reason they weren't very careful with tripping up other Yidden. They weren't makpid on lifnei iver l'sitei michshol, just like the Kutim. We're not concerned about that, as long as you're not tripping a real blind man, right? Which is the literal meaning of the pasuk. If it's a man that can see, I'll feed him even non-kosher food. So don't buy any items which have any kashrus questions to them, for concern about non-kosher additives, etc. So what are these six items? Wine, lo yayin, lo murios, fish sauce, lo cholov, milk, lo melach, salt, sal kundri, special salt, which sometimes would have non-kosher additives, lo chiltis, not that chiltis vegetable, which may have been sliced with non-kosher utensils, lo gvina, nor fish, nor cheese. Elo ben amumcha, unless you're buying it from a person who's a man of integrity and reliable. The kulon, in all these situations, regarding all these items, if you happen to be a guest, then you can partake, because as we said, these people themselves were careful with what they themselves would eat, so they would only serve in their own kitchens something which is kosher. The kulon means sarech, it's about bias. You're eating in his home, mutter, then you know it's kosher food. Mesayel Rav Shimon Levi. This supports Rav Shimon Levi. Rav Shimon Levi, shigilei balabayis lebeisim mutter. Likewise, if the balabayis sent you, mishlach monas out of his kitchen, whatever, so you know that it's kosher. My time of why? What's the difference? Balabayis leishavik hetir v'chlisur di. Oh, the fellow himself would not forego something which is mutter and eat something which is asur in terms of his own consumption. And likewise, if he sends you something from his home, we assume it's kosher. V'chmashagalei, what he sends you, Mimai the achel mashadli, the item that he sent him, we assume mimai the achel. It's from what he eats. Mashadli, he's sending him as well. So, meaning in a commercial setting, he's not very careful. But if it's his own personal, from his own personal supply, you can rely on it. Umelach sal kundris. Next item in the Mishnah, which you shouldn't be taking from a goy, is this melach sal kundris. Not regular salt, but this unique salt. What is this? My melach sal kundris. What is that? Rabbi Amar Shmuel, melach, a certain type of gourmet salt, shakol sal kundrei, roimio ichen oisa, all the hanchos in Rome eat it. Tanur Rabbanan, what's wrong with this melach sal kundris? So if it's melach sal kundris, if it's black colored, asura, you got to keep away, because it has something non-kosher. Lavon, if it's merely white, then it's okay. Muteres, divrei Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says just the opposite. Rabbi Yehuda, lavon, asura, the white one is a problem. Shechayr muteres, if it's black, it's okay. Both. I mean, he says both are problematic. Zubazu asura, white and black are both a problem. Rabbi Rechan, Rabbi Yechon, let me explain to you what's going on. Divrei Meir, lavon asura. According to Rabbi Meir, says the white ones are problematic. You know why? Kirvei dogim lavonim. So the innards, the kishkas, the intestines of the white fish, of these white-colored, Tamean, non-kosher, white intestines, murav and ba, are mixed into the salt, and that makes it, gives it the white pigment. So you know, it contains non-kosher ingredients. But the black ones are not problematic. According to the opinion that the black ones are problematic, because he holds that they mix in black material. They mix in the innards of black fish, and that gives it its black pigment. According to the opinion that both black and white are both problematic, because he holds both the white and the black are indicative of a non-kosher mix. Amravo Mishram Bukhun Galil. Zakinachad Hayabishkunasena, there was an elderly non-Jew living in our neighborhood. Shayamachlik Poneh Bishumr Chazir, he had an interesting recipe. He would smear the surface of this salt with lard. That's another reason to keep away. Now the Mishnah concludes, after giving us this whole long list of things which are forbidden to eat, asur ba'achila, but still mutar to have anah from them, the Mishnah again sums it up, harielu asurim, so all these are asur ba'achila and not ba'anah. Now when the Mishnah sort of repeats itself, you know there's some hidden message here. Meaning these are mutar ba'anah, but other things are not. What exactly are we alluding to? L'mutimai, what are we leaving out of this list? What are we coming to exclude? Which item is asur ba'anah? So l'chizki, according to Chizki's opinion discussed the other day, l'muti b'yadua, as opposed to the pickled stuff, well, you know for a fact that he threw in some wine. In that case, it's asur b'hano. It goes up to the next level. But l'Rabbi Yochanan, according to him, that even when you know they threw wine in there, since it's just mixed in, it's but it doesn't become asur b'hano. So what is asur b'hano? L'muti, as opposed to murios, the fish sauce, for concern about that wine content, L'gvinas beis Yonaiki, and the cheese is produced in the town beis Yonaiki, where they use avodah zarah rennet. Stomach Ramea in this Mishnah, this unnamed conclusion to the Mishnah is called like Ramea, who says that those two items are Asr Bahano. Continues the Mishnah. Oh, Ve'elu Mutar Machil. Ah, finally, we can eat some things. Some things which are really okay. Cholav Shechol Ve'el Kichavim. So you have milk produced by a goy. Although it was milked by a goy, but if it's under Yiddish supervision, V'Yisrael Roy Eyu, and the Yid is watching out to ensure it's kosher, then it's okay. V'advash, or honey purchased from a guy, no concern there. V'adav devonyeis, you have these clusters of grapes. Avavisha manatfin, even though they're dripping with juice, nobody wants the juice. They want to sell it as grapes. It actually ruins the appearance and the aimbem shemhech shemashke. You don't have to reckon with the juice. There's no yayin stam. There's no, and it's not even considered a liquid with respect to heksher, so fruit which are washed, which are come into contact with those primary liquids, one of which is grape juice, would be considered susceptible to further tumah. It becomes hukshal tumah, but this is not considered mashke. It's not really liquid. It's a bottle, so it doesn't affect the status of these grapes. Next on the list is ukvashin. You have these pickled items. Shein darkan losayis l'sechen yayin v'chayim is a type of recipe which doesn't call for wine or vinegar. So you know it's just, you know, kosher. It's a kosher pickle. With taris, you have this type of fish. Shein a trufa, which hadn't been mashed. So the kosher signs are clearly, you know, visible. You got with tzir, you have fish brine. Sheyesh badaga, where you find this little fishy swimming around, which was indicative of the fact that this brine is of the kosher variety, which produces this little fishy inside. So that's a raya, it's a sign of kashrus. V'olah shel chiltus, you have this chiltus vegetable, but not the actual sliced vegetable. You have the olah, you have the leaf of this plant, which was not cut by any utensil. So you know it's kosher. V'zeh seglus kois, you have this cluster of olives. Gluskois is like a cake, it's clustered together. Ham gugol, even though they're soft and moist, they're self-moist. They've self-moist because of the oil content. It's not indicative of anything added, any wine added. You're okay. Rabbi Yisrael Mashloch and Asurin, if they're really, really crumbling, then you know that they were treated with wine. That's a problem. Hachagavim, can you buy a grasshopper from a guy, right? Ready to eat. So it depends. Habam and Aslula Asurin, if it's coming from the Slula, which is the tray, you know, in front of the store there, then there's a concern that he may have sprinkled some wine on it to enhance it. You can't eat it. I mean, a heftig. But if it's coming from the, you know, the back room, the storage, mutar, then it's okay because he would not be treating it back there because it shortens its shelf life. He does it, you know, immediately before selling. So if it's from the back room, you know, it's good. B'chein lo truma. Likewise, regarding halachas of truma, as we're going to see tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. So the first item was milk by a goy under the Yisrael's supervision. Tanina, so our Mishnah is in line with the Brisa. L'hotan Rabbanon, Yoishev Yisrael. You don't need the Yisrael to actually milk the cow. As long as he's present, he's around, he provides a deterrent, right? Yoishev Yisrael b'sad edrei shalev kecham. A Yid could park himself near the flock, near the farm of the guy, and have the guy milk the cow, or maybe lo, and bring him the milk, without any concerns. So as long as the guy knows that he's there, he's looking out, he's now going to be deterred from playing any tricks. Hey, what exactly is going on this farm? If he has no non-kosher animal, you know, on the farm there, pshita, then obviously the Jewish, you know, the Jew's presence, even at the side of the farm, is okay, because as long as he looks out and makes sure there's no non-kosher animals being brought in, then what's the concern? You know, certainly he's milking the cows. That's all he has. Now, if there is a non-kosher animal to be found amongst his herd, then why is it sufficient to have the Yisrael standing on the outside? He doesn't know what's going on inside. Am I? Why is it enough? No, certainly we're speaking that there is a non-kosher animal to be found amongst his animals. So back to the question. Why is it sufficient to have a Yisrael sitting on the outside? What could he see from the outside? The answer is like this. Although in sitting position, while he's seated, he can't really take notice as to what's going on inside. But v'chikoy, as soon as he stands up, chazile, now the guy and his milking thing is in full view of the yid. He can see what's going on. V'chiyosef lechazile, when he's seated, he can't see the guy. So although in sitting position, he can't. But since the guy knows that he's there, and the guy knows that he shouldn't be mixing in non-kosher milk, and he knows that as soon as the yid gets up, he can see what's going on. So ma'udatim, perhaps I would think, kiva de Yosef, since while the yid is sitting, lo yechazle, he can't see what the guy is doing, nechosh, we shall be concerned, dilma ma'isim Arabic, perhaps the guy will bring some non-kosher milk and quickly mix it in. Kamash, the answer is no. That is considered under Jewish supervision. Why? Kiven the chikoy, because since when the yid gets up, chazle, he can see what the guy is doing. That provides a deterrent for the guy. And he's afraid, he's not going to mix anything into that milk, lest he lose his business and his customers. Okay, vadvash. What about honey? No problem. Dvash, l'maynechosh lo, because what's the concern by honey? Imishim erubei, the guy mixed in a little wine. Mr. Sorry, mixing in wine would spoil the honey, he wouldn't do that. Imishim bishuli ovdi kecham, is it because the guy cooked it? Well, that's not a concern, because nechal kamo yishu chay, because the honey can be eaten in its raw state as well. So cooking it doesn't make it bishulak. By the way, incidentally, an interesting shayla, because milk today is pasteurized and cooked by goyim. Right? So why is that not a concern of Bishul Akam? So the answer is because technically the milk is edible or drinkable prior to pasteurization. Right? The law requires them to pasteurize it for health concerns, for health reasons, to burn out the germs, bacteria. So the pasteurization process, the cooking process, is to take care of a side issue, not the actual, it's not for the milk itself. So even though the milk happens to get cooked along with it, it's still considered nechel k'mo yishu chai, since it technically could be eaten and enjoyed without that cooking. It's not considered bishulak. Okay, so that's not a concern. Imashim ge'uli avd kechab. Are we concerned that there's some, you know, flavor from the containers, out of the non-kosher containers containing this honey? The answer is nesin tam lof gamu. It's spoiled flavor, spoiled taste, which is actually detrimental to the content of mutan, therefore it's not a problem. But adav de vanios, you have these grape clusters, aval bishem natfis, even though they're dripping, ein b'mishem hechshemash, don't be concerned about them affecting the tahara status of the grapes. It's not considered liquid, it's bottle, it's insignificant. Asks the Gemara, we have a kasha. We have a kasha from a brice, which discusses a very similar case. So although in Amishim was speaking about grapes that were intended for, you know, consumption as is, not meant for wine pressing, the brice that we're going to bring actually discusses a case of haboitzer legas. So he's picking, he's harvesting his grapes to take them to the gas, to the wine press. So they're meant for wine production. And they're dripping. Okay, they were punctured along the way, they're dripping. What's the status of that juice? Shammai Omer, huksha. We have to reckon with it, and the grapes are considered Hushal Kabotuma, because although now he doesn't care about it, they're stripping off the basket on the floor, but next time perhaps he'll want to have the juice, so he'll actually place those grapes into, you know, close containers to salvage that liquid. In that case, he's giving significance and importance to the liquid. So in all cases, we say we treat it like liquid, and it's machshir l'kabotum. Hilaim lo yuchsha, no. In this case, it's not a problem because it's just dripping out and getting lost. And we find that Hillel agreed to Shammai. He retracted and he accepted Shammai's opinion that the dripping has to be considered like liquid with respect to affecting the tahara status of the grapes. So why is it that now Mishnah, we're not concerned? Answers the more big difference between us and them. Hasam, in that case, Kaboyle Lamashka, why is he harvesting his grapes? Lagas, it said, right? He's taken to the gas, to the wine press. It's meant for wine production. So sure, every drop of liquid contributes to the ultimate goal. Hachalai Kaboyle Lamashka, but here, it's not so. He's harvesting it for the sake of the grapes. He's selling fresh grapes. He doesn't want it to be dripping and all mucky. So in this case, the liquid is insignificant and not reckoned with. Okay, let's do a quick chazor of today's daf. Items that are forbidden, chilek, that's the mini fish, which comes along with other mini fish which are non-kosher, so you can't know what's what, you can't buy from a goy. Interestingly, we learned about the simani dogim, that either way, it's okay, meaning if it has it now, although it will shed it on its way out of the water, it's okay. Likewise, even if it doesn't have it now, but will grow later, like the sultanas fish, that's okay as well. There was a certain river where they knew just factually, scientifically, that there's no, it doesn't grow, it doesn't develop, it doesn't breed non-kosher fish, so any fish from there was presumed to be good. We have a list of certain fish which are fine, certain which are not. We have many stories where they discovered these even little flimsy, thin scales. And that was enough to make it kosher. We have the story of Hashem spared Eitz Tzadik from non-kosher food. We had an interesting discussion regarding the family of Yichaver, who retained his status until proven otherwise. Things sent with a goy need to be sealed, closed up. Some items which are more tempting need to be double sealed as well. In Syria, you got to be careful. Don't purchase those items, but you can eat in his house or accept from him personally because we assume it's kosher. Certain type of salt was known to have this non-kosher additive and has to be kept away from. We have items which are fine. Chalav, which is produced under the care of a yid, so that's Chalav Yisrael, right? And the chiddush was, even though he's not actually eyeing it all the time, he's just standing nearby, that provides a deterrent, that's considered under kosher supervision. Interestingly, Rav Moshe Feinstein was the one who introduced this new idea about government inspection. And he ruled that it's, to a certain extent, it is sufficient to provide deterrent for the goyim from mixing in non-kosher milk. He says that's apidin, but it's only something to be relied on in a time of dachak. Lechat chili, says Yirei Shemayim, is meant to actually only consume Chalav Yisrael, even if it costs a bit more. Then you know for sure that it's kosher milk. We spoke about honey not being a problem, the grapes, things which are purchased from a goy. Nevertheless, presumed to be fine and dandy. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.